Wardrop 6. What were the conditions like in the aircraft? What forms of heating and oxygen did you have?
Well, we had no oxygen, of course, but the heating was only from the engine, more or less. The exhaust at the back was all right, but we had, of course, sheepskin boots and leather clothing and fur-lined gloves and a helmet. And I personally used to wear a silk stocking always on my head before I put my helmet on. And I also used to have silk gloves underneath my fur-lined gloves. They were most effective. As regards any other aid, we used to have wild oil. We never saw any. It might have been somewhere, but we never had it. And I used to put Vaseline on my face and found that also very effective till we came back. Otherwise, we were quite comfortable, really, because although it's open cockpit, you were shielded from the elements, as it were, and by virtue of being the enclosed cockpit from the front. I mean, in other words, you had an enclosed, except for the top, which didn't matter much. The speed you were going, it didn't matter much. You were just enclosed and you sat side by side, so it didn't really matter. You were quite comfortable. We never found any difficulty about it.
The whale oil and the Vaseline, that was to stop frostbite.
Frostbite, yes. I unfortunately was frostbitten on one occasion because the bombs got jammed, two bombs got jammed. I couldn't release them with my gloves on, so I took my gloves off and to make certain that these bombs went. And unfortunately, because I couldn't get my glove on again, and I got into serious trouble with the medical officer for doing such a thing. It's really I should never have done that. For 3 days I walked about, and I don't know whether you know anything about frostbite, but the same and similar way in every way as though you put your hand in a furnace. You just blister up. Your arm. I had a blister from my elbow to my wrist. And the friends of mine used to take me around the aerodrome with us. It's really going really crazy with this, with the pain, but they couldn't do anything with it until such time that it came more or less to its height. And then somebody lanced it afterwards, and it's quite all right. No damage really. I sometimes feel that it might have affected me this way, that particular right hand sometimes gets colder than the other one. I don't know if it's just surmising, but it's a fact. You notice it go white in the winter, very much so. But otherwise, it was all right.
You had a medical examination after every trip, did you?
Practically, yes. We too often have that, you know. And certainly, if you came down, you see, like we had one or two of these crashes, you then looked at very, very closely before we went again. After our crash on the sands, all I had was rather a bad black eye. But I was flying again next afternoon, and the theory then was that you either went on or you didn't. And if if you didn't go on, you finished flying. It's as simple as that. But if you didn't fly immediately, then you're never gone. Unfortunately, one or two of my friends had to come back to England. They got yellow jaundice through it. But that was a theory, that it's a question of survival of the fittest. One of the questions about the quickest also, but the fittest. I mean, you had to be fit, and that's the way they method. I believe that nowadays the modern technique is different altogether. We're supposed to have a certain leave after a certain number of raids and all that sort of thing. But what they did in this war, I just don't know. But because the theory was all right, the practice wasn't quite so good because we just couldn't afford it. We had no other people to do it, you see, after a time. But after the second, I had two crashes. One, as I say, was brought down from Bruges. The next one, we collapsed at 200 feet with about 10 or 12 days after. And just after that, Commander Bradley thought about time I had some leave. And so I was sent back to back in England in about 4 hours. So that's when I had a very nice leave, 14 days.
Did you find when you were on leave that England seemed a different place from how you were imagining it from when you were
Oh, yes.
outside?
Yes, you begin to wonder what they are, you know, what people are doing and so forth. It seemed so, how can I put it, so quiet and so tranquil, as it were. And I used to worry, of course, our mother was feeding and that sort of thing, you see. Well, I found that when I came home, especially in uniform, I went to shops and so forth, and did a bit of shopping, which I hated, of course, like every other man, but I was able to get more preferential treatment. Perhaps it's wrong for me to say that, but there it was. It's one of those cases that one took advantage, if possible, for not for your own sake, but for mother's sake, you see. And I did really have preferential treatment, especially when he came back in the uniform with the wings up and so forth. As I said before, it seemed to open the doors for quite a number of little things like that. But I used to enjoy it. I mean, I enjoyed the company and so forth, and the change and rest away from all. But I was always glad somehow to, you know, once it's all over and my leave is finished, to get back again and get back into activity again. I really had to be active. I couldn't stand being inactive, as it were. So. But, and I never, I never regretted it. I regretted doing that time, because I found a lot of friends. I feel that did me a lot of good and made me what I am, or what I have been anyway, and what I am today, I'm sure of that.
If we could talk about some of your particular raids. On the 28th of September 1917, you went to Namur.
Mm.
That was a rather a special operation, wasn't
it? Yes, that was to break down a railway bridge at Namur. I think if you look at the map, you'll find there's a railway bridge coming over the river there, which is more or less all the that angle, that part of the country rather, nearly all the ammunition was coming from Germany to for their troops. Well, apparently that bridge had to be smashed before our troops would advance, or at least our army authorities wanted it smashed up to stop the armaments and extra ammunition coming through. And so we were detailed then to go to Namur. Brackley, as I said before, earlier on, that he was the pilot, Paul Bucher, he was the observer, and myself. Unfortunately, we hit the bridge. We did what we set out to do. And the proudest time, I suppose, when it was reported that the longest raid ever taking place was 250 miles behind the German lines, and we managed to get there and back. I think we had one or two people shoot at us and so forth, as usual, but that was one of those things that just bound to happen. But it didn't do any damage as far as we were concerned. We got back all right. And it was reported by the by our agents that it was successful. It was successful. It stopped them from building up there. Ammunition and that sort of thing, and armaments.
And on the 28th of October 1917, you went to Cologne?
No, I attempted to go to Cologne. Uh-huh. And we attempted to go there, but we didn't get there. We went as far as Antwerp, finally. The rain came and lightning and so on. But no, we didn't make Cologne at all.
That was due to poor visibility.
We think so, we said so. And we didn't make it. That was, we wanted to very badly.
Is that would have been the first air raid on
Germany? I'm not sure whether the Independent Air Force were doing it or not. I'm not sure, but we were anxious to do that. I didn't make it.
7th of June 1918. That was when you said you crashed on the sands.
Yes.
Dunkirk and Gravelines. What was the story of that raid?
Well, we went to Denny Westrom Aerodrome, which is just a German aerodrome, obviously. And we got to 7,000 feet, and we crossed the lines at Dixmude and flew to the east until we got the Bruges Canal, which is our usual method of going down to St. Denny Westrom. And we saw a machine at St. Denny, and the landing lights were on. So then we obviously attacked it, and naturally enough, the lights went out. It's obvious. And we hovered in the vicinity, and presently a red light was fired from the air and two white lights from the ground. And then all the lights came on again. That was their signal, of course. And we took a run from the west to the east and down the southern side of the drome. And then a parachute flare was dropped. And that's the neighbour enough to see the ground like daylight.
So then you dropped the parachute flare?
No, they did.
Ah.
They did. Mm-hmm. So we started then a small fire, which... the works were men's quarters, and saw a searchlight, a loose tamp aerodrome, so dropped a Cooper bomb there. This is one of my sort of incendiary bombs, you know. Mm-hmm. And not very active on the Newport front, but the Ypres sector was very, very active. And flying along the sands between Gravelines and Dunkirk, and we suddenly crashed into the sands, and the machine was a total wreck. We never did know what caused it or what had happened.
It just dropped.
Just dropped. For any of us remember, we were at 200 feet coming to land. We were actually coming down, glad I didn't get them down lower, you see. And the only thing I can remember is the altitude meter reaching 200 feet. The next day I remember is I was buried in sand. Well, in fact, I was choking, really, because I was head first in the sands.
Yes, you had been right in the nose.
Oh, no, nose, yes. We buried, got the pilot out himself and then pulled him out. Mine was his flying boot, which frightened the life out of me. I thought I'd pull his leg off, you see, but I didn't realise in the dark that he had one flying boot on, which is, of course, sheepskin, and the other none at all, just his ordinary trousers. And I got the fellow at the back, and the gun at the back, named Thomas, and he was poorly, badly injured, I think, really. And they rushed him off to London by plane, but I understand he died next day.
Could it be possible that you might have hit a seabird or something?
Well, I wouldn't know. I don't think so. Those machines of ours were too heavy. I think we'd have taken a seabird or anything like that. No, I don't know what could have happened, really. Whether we got hit unbeknown or something happened, I just don't know. No, we don't know. Or whether the controls were slightly severed, you see, and they're not knowing, and still going on, and suddenly that went. It was either out of control, more or less. That's what it amounted to. But we never did know exactly what it caused it. But because they came and rescued us, and actually enough, pulled us out. And that's when I had this black eye, as I say. But the only damage I had was during the war, fortunately. But it was a black eye, believe me. But, and I think according to my records, I think I was flying next afternoon. June the 7th. And June the 10th and 11th, I went on a raid again. The Roman Commissioner gave me then.
And you were shot down? You came down again after the raid on Bruges Docks?
On Bruges Docks, that was, yes. That was on the 16th and 17th, I think, of June. 15th and 16th of June. That was the Bruges Docks, yes. They hit us, hit the engine, water radiator, I think, really severed. Because naturally enough, when that happens, a machine, one engine to stop. There's no good racing the other one, that's no good. So that would be more or less throttled right the way down. That's all free to throttle down, for God's sake, otherwise we'd catch fire. So we practically glided all the way down from Bruges to Newport. And during that time, of course, the searchlights were picking us up from one searchlight to the other, just carrying us over, and everything was being fired at us. But the amazing part is that not only the three of us were actually hit. The machine must have been riddled. I mean, there's no question about that. And when we landed, we got out, of course, to see what we could save. But all I saved was the maps, of course, and our own revolvers. And we simply got away from the machine, knowing full well that the Germans wouldn't be long before they either fired at us or the machine. And the Belgians came out and rescued us, took us to their dugouts. But we were very fortunate as far as we were concerned. As soon as the daybreak came, because the Germans, they just blew the machine to pieces, smithereens, and they left of it at all.
And you did a number of raids up and down the coast, did you, in conjunction with naval bombardment?
Well, the buggy was the one that we actually took part in, but our role there wasn't very, how can I put it, a means to do any damage, but just to attract the searchlights and force them to put their searchlights up while our Navy tried to get in as close as they possibly could without being found, see. But as soon as the first shot was fired from the Navy, so all the searchlights went down to sea, and they started bombarding them, of course. As far as we were concerned, we just left alone, so we had no more to do, simply come home. All we were doing was going round, dropping one bomb at a time, kind of thing, going out again, you see, several of us. Always just doing that in turn, you see, just to keep on making a nuisance of ourselves, really, to force them to put the searchlights up and the guns. But when they started the raid on the Uruguay Mole, of course, they down with all the searchlights and all the bombardment started down the naval. So, but of course, we had bombed the lock gates on many occasions, and we could never understand why, although we went down very, very low on occasions, and in fact, special commissions some of us were asked to do by getting down as low as possible. So we dropped 500-pound bombs on the gates, and we knew full well we hit the gates. But the photographs show next day there's no damage. And it's been on time after time, and we're just puzzled. And one for a long, long time after we found, of course, there was two gates. There's one out, and of course, that was damaged, so they put the other one out. Repair the other one. And that's why it was a puzzle of us, why we never managed to do what we thought we were going to do, is smash them up altogether. It's very clever of them, but it was no good to us. We used to bomb it all the way along the canal, also Bruges docks, of course, to try and stop them, you see. And the Navy, of course, put in block ships in the canal. I don't know if you've seen the photographs of those, but they were put in the canal, you know.
What was your last raid of the war?
The war was Charleroi, isn't it? I think it's Charleroi. And the last raid I took part in was the 9th and 10th of November, with Charleroi Railway Junction and Station.
Did you hit it?
Well, we think we hit the train, or hit the station, the line. The train certainly stopped, and we feel confident we hit the station. But that's, we had no verification of that. At least I didn't. So I couldn't say whether we did or not. But visibly no activity on the lines at all. Bearing in mind, of course, the November 11th was Armistice Day.
And then in January 1919, you returned to being an apprentice at Edmondson's.
Yes, well, it's called to finish the time there for us, and I came to England, I think, 20th of January, or 22nd of January, I'm not quite sure which, leaving this air service.